You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
All right, so we're talking about the director's cut of that Game of Thrones episode, The Long Night, but only the longest night.
You know, this was so disappointing. I mean, after years of waiting for a conclusion, Daenerys doesn't even show up once. I didn't see a single dragon, not one ice... Oh, wait a minute. I think we're talking about a different movie, Justin.
I don't know. There was a lot of nudity in here, too.
Quite a bit. but yeah, it's... Well, depending on what your particular preferences are, this may be... as disappointing as the end of Game of Thrones, but maybe not. I actually thought this movie had quite a few things going in its favor, despite all of the relentless nudity. But when you're talking about a film that deals with sex trafficking, eventually sex is going to have to be depicted in some way, shape, or fashion.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting. So, yeah, this film is The Longest Night. This is actually an Ecuadorian drama, and apparently it is Ecuador's entry for the International Feature Oscar this year.
Yeah, so, and it came out South by. Apparently it was released in Ecuador in 2017, but premiered at South by this year and has been making the rounds and getting some, you know, the New York Latino Film Festival and HBO Audience Awards and various places. It's actually getting itself a quite a good reputation. So Ecuador,
I mean, it did a whole minute of intro title cards with all the reason that stuff for this film.
Yeah.
Just like, they really want you to know this is a big film.
Well, I mean, because you think about it, this was not on my radar at all. And when you mentioned it to me, I was like, well, it's a potential Oscar contender. I should probably watch it because... full disclosure, I am frequently behind when it comes to, well, Oscar films, period, but specifically the foreign entries, because a lot of times, you know, every once in a while, a foreign film entry gets, you know, it gets a little bit of a buzz, it gets a good, decent-sized release in the U.S., but more often than not, they disappear, even if they're an Oscar contender. It's like once the Oscars are over, if they didn't win, you may never see this movie again. So I wanted to jump on it while we still had an opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, there was like 93 entries for the International Feature Oscar this year. So,
jeez,
I mean,
yeah.
I don't know if this will actually make it out of the shuffle or not. That's to be seen. But we should explain what this movie's about a little bit. So, kind of what you were saying, this takes place in Ecuador, and it deals with this main character here, Dana, being played by Noelle Schoenwald. She is a woman who lives in one of the big cities there. She works as a prostitute, and you start to realize that a lot of that was definitely not her choice, because it deals with a lot of stuff about the Ecuadorian slave trade, sex trafficking trade, and slave trade a little bit. And it's her being under the thumb of some various mobsters in the area and trying to find a way to free herself and to help others who are in her situation. Now, I say that that wasn't entirely clear for the first 20 or so minutes of this movie, because I went in very cold to this film, and I did not know what was going on for a good part of the beginning.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that this movie does, and I think it does effectively, anytime you're dealing with a story that deals so heavily around sex, I mean, Pretty Woman this ain't. It's written and directed, it's a debut feature by Ecuadorian writer-director Gabriela Calvache, and what she's done with this movie, which I thought was interesting, because while you were watching it, you actually messaged me and says, is this movie going to get a little more, you know, is it going to get going? what she really does here that I think is effective is kind of avoid some of the conventions of your traditional three-act structure, and we're basically allowed to see a day in the life of Dana, this prostitute. Who, as we find out, is also, she's very glamorous, she's very beautiful, she's always, you know, well put together. She definitely just gives off the air of high-class call girl. And what we see as she goes from John to John is that it's a grind. That, you know, mm-hmm. she has to keep this constant persona going, and, you know, some of her clients are a little bit rough, some are nice. One in particular who will return kind of gives her something that's kind of like a human connection that she probably rarely gets in the course of her business day. And the way Calvache gets around that sort of female or male gaze, rather than making this look kind of gross and exploitative, is for all of the flesh on display, there's often close-ups on Dana's body that show, you know, bruises, scars, and the track marks from the narcotic she takes to just kind of get through this day. And rather than have like a moment where you get this big exposition dump through like some dream sequences and through some conversations and a lot of phone calls that she makes back to her hometown, little by little we start to piece together her life rather than have it presented to us in a very conventional way. But eventually, once we know the big beats of her life and how she got to where she is right now, that's when the plot begins to kick in, because we do discover that part of the reason she fell into the sex trade is because she has a daughter back home in a poor village, and the daughter is dying of an illness, and because medication is expensive, treatment is expensive, she turns to a life as a stripper, as we glimpse in flashbacks to this club, which we finally figure out is called La Mala Noche. Which is
I was wondering what the title had to do with anything. Yeah. It's like, oh, it was the club that she was working at.
Yeah. And then eventually it's owned by this nefarious mobster named Nelson. And obviously she got sick of that. She needed more money. So she moved into the life of a prostitute. But just because she's no longer, you know, confined within the club like some of the other women who are sexually traded there, she still never completely free of him. She constantly has to, deal with this jerk. And one day we see, there should be mentioned, there's a B story. We see that after the hurricanes, a lot of these coastal regions, similar to the place where Dana grew up, a lot of kids get orphaned. They get lost. They get misplaced from their parents. And they're vulnerable. And they're very easy to be picked up by sex traffickers who then groom them for a life of basically sexual slavery.
I mean, yep.
It's a real feel-good movie, people. I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah. No, don't go into this expecting any kind of, like, lightness other than maybe, like, a moment or two of laughter from, like, a side gag. But other than that, yeah, this is a really heavy film. It deals with some very heavy stuff. And again, this is a movie for adults, just in terms of the nudity, in terms of the subject matter, a little bit of violence here and there with some, like, the darker parts of the gang life kind of stuff. And, I mean, again, when I say that I had some problem getting into this movie, I've seen enough of these foreign films to get that kind of vibe of the unconventional structure and some of the slower-paced stuff. Because, I mean, most international cinema feels more like this movie. Very, you know, slice of life in their approach. Very easygoing with plot structure. Because, like, you know, I think of films like 2 Days, One Night, that Belgian film, where it's very much like there's no plot structure, like, strictly for that one. It's a very, this happens and this happens and this happens. I think my biggest issue here was just that for the first 20 or so minutes, there's so much of the, you know, lingering on the little arty details, and it's like, yeah, it tells you a little bit about her, but it feels like, again, it's not clear what's going to happen through it. But once we start to get, you know, pull the curtain on some of those details, it starts to really establish connections between the characters. It really starts to show off some of the other skills of the actors, because I think that anytime that Noelle Schoenwald is with the other guy who's the, you know, again, the one healthy relationship in her life being played by Christian Mercado.
Yeah.
The two of them are great. Like, yeah. They really have a good chemistry with each other.
He is a doctor, as we find out. In an intertwining plot, he also has a child who is sick in the hospital. But unlike Dana, who, as we find out, her real name is Pilar, unlike her, he actually is a doctor. He has, you know, means. He has resources to take care of his child. It's a really weird... That's where you start seeing some of the structures. I wouldn't say this movie doesn't have a structure. It takes a while to reveal itself, but you see these interlocking narratives. You know, both characters have a daughter who is very ill and in the hospital. You see the little girl who is roughly the same age as Bilata's actual child, who is sold into slavery. Like Bilata, the little girl is being trapped in this system that she can't get out of. You see a lot of these twinning effects until they eventually converge. And for reasons I won't get into, Bilal, or Dana, as she calls herself professionally, she decides that she can't let this happen to another person. And yeah. she decides, I've got to do something about it. And she enlists the aid of Julian, this guy who's her John, but you know, he's a potentially a more interesting character than he's allowed to be, because I there's something interesting about this guy who is, he's the closest thing to a likable adult male in this movie, and yet he himself is flawed. Where we meet him, he's cheating on his wife, you know, he's not telling, you know, the truth about his own self. And yeah, it's without spoiling anything, his character I don't think is resolved in a way that I found completely satisfying, but yet if it satisfied me, then it would have hit the Hollywood tropes. Nobody in this movie is a hero, and no one in this movie is a complete villain except for the character of Nelson.
The sex slavery dudes are definitely villains in this one. But they're not nice.
You meet a woman, a pregnant woman, who is preying upon children, and at first it seems horrific. This it's obscene, this idea of a woman who is herself pregnant, who is lying to children and getting them in the car and then taking them to be groomed as sex slaves. But at some point we realize that she too is trapped in this system. It's a world where everybody, in order to for their own safety or their own self-interest, everybody in this world is willing to do something reprehensible.
Sure.
Even the character of Nelson kind of has an off-the-cuff comment about, he's like, well, I didn't have time to be bored when I was a kid. I've been working ever since I was a child. And you kind of get the sense that this is a world that he himself was born into. And who knows, you see some of these characters who might start off as sex slaves, move up into like prostitution, then eventually at some point kind of move into management positions because that's their life now. And what the hell else are they going to do to make a living?
Yeah, and I do feel like, though, like, when we say all that stuff is really fascinating. I just feel like this film didn't push it enough. And part of it is that this movie is surprisingly short. It's like 90 minutes, you know, just barely. And I feel like, while normally that's a good thing for a movie to be short and to the point, I feel like this movie actually could have benefited from being a little bit longer or not wasting so much time on some of the more artier, closing, loving shots kind of thing. Because I feel like It did have a lot to say, but by the time it ended, I was like, it's kind of like you were. I'm like, well, I'm not sure if I really got what I was supposed to get out of this movie. I get because I'll admit too, one problem I had was that I don't know if this was true with your screener, but the end title card that usually gives you the big important details wasn't subtitled, and I'm sorry, my Spanish is just not that good.
There are moments in this movie within certain scenes where the subtitles drop out. And the final title card of this film, it basically presents some, it wasn't subtitled for me either, but my Spanish was just enough that I could grasp it. It provides some sobering, like, statistics and information about the state of sex trafficking around the world, how, you know, if you count sex trafficking, there's more slaves living now than have ever existed before previously, and how these sex traffickers exploit the most vulnerable members of society, usually women and children. Yep. And it's really there to kind of, and I think that's Calvache's way of going, look, I know I just showed you this fictional work, but here's the real issues. Here's what's really going on in my country and in other countries, probably your country too. And without being able to read that, you're going to miss some of that. And it's really disappointing because the distributor should have just, I mean, come on, that's a title card. Somebody in Adobe Premiere or something could probably just whip that together real quickly for the
I can't fully blame the film. I don't know if that was just a case with our screeners or not.
It's not the filmmaker's fault.
Yeah, no. So that's the thing, though, is just, I just feel like this movie could have been a bit more. I feel like, as much as I did like these characters, I just only got to know them so much, and then it's just like, well, now it's over. So it just kind of came and went. And also, I don't know about you, I sometimes have problems with these films and the ways that they handle their third acts, because there is a very clear end third act sequence here, where, you know, it's like, okay, now we got to do this thing.
Yeah.
And it was fine. I've seen other films do this kind of third act a little bit better, I feel like, because I can't say it too much because obviously, I mean, you guys should know where this kind of movie is going based on what we're telling you.
I mean, it becomes a revenge thriller by the end. And obviously they don't have the resources, I think, to really pull that off. And it's not a thriller. I think it's being marketed as a thriller, and it has that.
Yeah, no, seriously, I saw some reviews. Yeah, I saw some reviews. They're like, oh, it's one of the most pulse-pounding thrillers I've seen all year. I'm like, honestly, it didn't really become a thriller until the last 30 or 40 minutes of the movie, because right. The rest of it is just a, you know, again, it's a slice-of-life drama about the horrors of sex trafficking and prostitution.
Yeah.
But it, again, it couldn't seem to decide which one it wanted to do, because it kind of wanted to do both in a way that I feel like worked to the detriment of both sides.
Yeah, I mean, I could easily see, like, an American remake of this film, and it either has a more happy ending, or at minimum, it ends in an orgy of violence that this movie can't quite muster. They just don't have the intention of doing it that way, or they don't have the resources to pull it off the way we're used to, you know, a big action-packed finale. And again, ultimately, it's a movie where nobody really gets out of this unscathed.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's fine. It doesn't have to end with a happy ending. I think it's just the problem that it felt like it was trying to have too much on its plate, where it's like, yeah, like, it probably would have worked better if it was a more intimate drama. It didn't need to become a thriller. It's like, yeah, you know, trying to do this thing to help this young girl is one thing, but it felt like the way it escalated felt a little artificial to try and make it a thriller movie at the end.
Oh, agreed. I think that this is a, as I mentioned earlier, this is a debut feature. It shows some of that, that, you know, clearly this is somebody who's really kind of, you know, learning to master their craft, but it is a very strong debut feature. And
sure.
Certainly, if she can do something as good or better than this, then it would be worth watching. Hey, for your first debut feature, for your to be picked as the representative for your country on your debut film, that shows signs of great promise, I think. Either that there were really poor films in Ecuador made that year. But I don't know enough about the Ecuadorian film culture, so who knows how many films they make per year, but to me, that's astounding, because that's actually probably easier than winning the... that's probably harder than winning the Best Foreign Oscar. Because if you get accepted, then you are only competing against, like, four other films from four other countries, whereas just to get your name in the hat, you have to compete with every single movie released in your country. That'd be like if there was an event ceremony somewhere that was bigger than the Oscars and American critics, you know, and industry people had to sit down and go, well, shit, we can only pick one American movie to enter. What is the most American movie? What is the movie that represents us at our best? And how do you even have that conversation? But I can see why they picked this, because it is a weighty theme and it is dealing with real issues, and you have a fantastic central performance by Noelle Schoenwald, who, according to the press notes, is a Colombian actress, biologist, and model. And I'm like, wait,
wow.
She's a biologist? So she really carries this picture. She's in every scene virtually, and really has to play basically two versions of this same woman, and goes through an emotional ringer. So absolutely worth, and spends a good portion of the movie completely vulnerable and naked and breaking down emotionally. This is not a comfortable role to play, and the fact that she does it so convincingly and so compellingly is definitely a testament to her abilities.
Yeah, no, I want to see more of her. I want to see more of Christian Mercado. I think he was really good in this movie, too. And I think that's where I think this director and writer's strengths lie, is in getting into the characters. Because whenever it actually focused on being a character piece, I think that was the strongest part of the whole film. And I think it actually would benefit from not having to feel obligated to do more generic plot structure stuff.
Yeah,
so I think that is definitely, it is a compliment, genuinely, to say that this is a fairly good character study. So I guess just winding down then, I mean, unless there's any other points you make, because I couldn't really say anything else about the filmmaking itself, because it's a finely produced film. You know, it's nothing to really write home about, but it's not badly made either.
Oh, no. I mean, there's certainly worse films you could be watching. But it's just one of the rare opportunity to see a film from another country that you don't normally get to see. I mean, we live on a diet of, like, you know, American films, but also, you know, British, a lot of South Korean stuff now, stuff out of Hong Kong, occasionally French and German and Spanish. But like Ecuador, I'm like, I don't know if I've ever seen a film from Ecuador. And
I can't think of any off the top of my head. And, I mean, and I've been trying to get a lot more into foreign films lately, because even reviewing stuff like The Battle of Janksari, which I never would have thought about if it wasn't put on my doorstep here. It's just like, oh, hey, a South Korean war film? I don't think I've ever seen one like that. Let's check it out.
Yeah, and you know, and a lot of times these are the films that honestly, you know, if it doesn't get an Oscar nomination, I mean, it's doing well in festivals. If it doesn't get the Oscar nom, it probably won't get anything like a real distribution deal in America. And you, the listener, the viewer, you may never get an opportunity to see it. And that, to me, is the real crime. That, you know, there's a lot of great films out there that we just never get to see because of just politics or business decisions. And they go, eh, we're not going to put any money behind that because it's not a front runner, you know, in its category. So just let it disappear. And that's a shame.
Yeah. And that's the thing, though, is that at least it will get a fair shake because just saw this news today that they are allowing for screeners for Oscars to be put on this giant website they just made called the Screening Room. And apparently everybody in the Oscars will vote for the Best International Features. So if they can market to the right people, I mean, maybe it might get some traction with some people,
you know,
for that.
And if anybody has the password or login for that, send it our way, please, because we'd love to get in there and see what they're doing.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you know, just saying.
You know, that's where the good stuff is.
One day. Yeah, so I guess just winding down the final thoughts then. What would you say is your final thought and rating for this?
Well, okay. Well, as we said, this is a film that works best as a character drama. I completely agree with you on that. In its final act, it tries to become more of a genre film, and it doesn't always succeed. It's not bad, but you've all seen better. I've rarely seen anything as good as the first two acts, but I've seen a whole lot better than that third act. And the third act is always where you kind of make or break the movie, in my opinion. What this really coasts on is the strength of the performances, particularly Noelle Schoenwald, who, you know, if this were an English language or even a European film, would probably be getting a lot of talk about. But as such, in Ecuador, who knows if she's going to be able to make a big splash. Apparently she did do a film for Mike Newell adaptation of Love in the Time of Cholera. So she's got some international, she's Colombian, so she's got some international work under her belt, and I'd like to see more of her because I think she's the real reason to watch this movie. Otherwise, if you can find it, it's worth your time. It's only about 90 minutes, like Justin said. It's not very long, and there are some, even though there's some arty stuff, there are some really wonderful little grace notes. I particularly loved a sequence where she goes to get some emergency cosmetic surgery, if you will, and it's from a place that I can't even believe such a place exists. It's like a company,
I know, right?
That restores religious icons exclusively, and the imagery of her, this prostitute who's being patched up to cover all the bruises amongst all of these broken angels. I mean, the imagery is pretty much on the nose, but I've never seen it done quite that way before. I am going to give this 7 out of 10 broken angels.
Aww. you know, it's funny because I thought we were going to be more far apart from this than I thought, but I think I'm right about the same level as you, where I do feel like this is a good movie. I think this is a good for a debut film. I think it's good for having a strong couple lead performances. I just kept waiting for it to be a great movie, and it had moments of greatness. Like, I think the middle section, when they deal with a lot of the more intimate stuff between her and her mother and the other guy, that was some of the strongest stuff in the whole film, I would argue.
Oh, I agree with you.
Yeah. And so I just wish that they had a little bit more restraint to say, okay, they want the revenge fantasy at the end, and that would be satisfying. But I don't know if that was... It was not the best choice for this movie in terms of what would fit the tone, I think, personally. But it's not... Again, it's far from the worst thing I've ever seen of this stuff. So if you get a chance to see this... I mean, it's already technically been out for a few weeks. So, you know, you get a chance to either, like, find it on demand or find a way to get access to it. It might be good for a watch if you're willing to watch some more grown-up kind of stuff like this.
Yeah.
So I would give this about... Go with my gut a little bit. I'm going to say 6.5 out of 10. 6.5 out of 10 just graduated students getting their first time.
Okay. Oh, God. Yeah, that was... I forgot about that moment. Yeah. Hey, that's a thing that happens. And then it gets weird.
Very weird.
And I'm like, whoa. Yeah. Whoa, wait, what? I've seen this scenario play out in other films before, but not quite like this. And again, that's
and
why
not so
I,
casual
you know,
either.
And so yeah. casual, it's like, Dad, do you have to be here? I mean, it's kind of like, come on, get the fuck out of here. It is like, I guess he wanted to stick around and make sure he was getting his money's worth.
Jeez Louise. That's going to be a long night for all of them.
Indeed, the longest night. Which, by the way, that's just so weird. Did you catch that the name of the bar was La Mala Noche?
There was like a casual reference somewhere in the middle, like, oh no, we're not going to meet at the longest night. Right. I'm like, oh, okay, that's what that was. But you know, it's literally a blink and you miss it.
Well, and here's the thing. I know this is nitpicky of me, but La Mala Noche literally translates to the bad night, which is the worst name for a nightclub / strip club I've ever heard of. Let's go to the bad night. But for whatever reason, the English language release, it's been called the longest night, which has nothing to do because, you know, the end of it doesn't take place at night. It's not the name of the bar that we only kind of intuit and only see in flashbacks. And, you know, maybe it's because there was a Gus Van Sant film already called La Mala Noche. I don't know. Maybe they thought it was longest night was more evocative. But I was sitting there like, what the hell is, why is this called La Mala Noche? And then why is it being called the longest night? Either way, because I thought the longest night was going to structurally play into the narrative. Like, oh, this is all going to take, oh, like the third act's going to take place over the course of one really long night. And then I was like, nope. Oh, it's the name of the strip club? Whatever. Look, if your friends ever say, hey man, I know this really hot strip club, it's called the Bad Night, you should probably go somewhere else or get different friends.